What up, guys? Welcome to the Whole Automist Podcast. This is Mendy. Today, I have a very special episode. I have a special guest, Ryan Finkelstein from the Locked On Mets Podcast. He was my first guest, and having him on is always a blast. We talk about a Marcus Stroman possible extension, Conforto, the Mets win, everything else. Let's hop right into it, guys. Welcome to the Whole Lot of Mets Podcast. I have a very special guest. In fact, my first guest ever on the Whole Lot of Mets Podcast. I have the Locked On Mets host, Ryan Finkelstein. Ryan, my boy, how are we doing?
Doing great today.
We finally had a Mets win. They actually scored some runs. Ryan, isn't it amazing when a baseball team scores actual runs, what can happen in a game?
You don't. I mean, it's almost hard to remember what it's like when runs are scored. I mean, it feels like it's been years. I mean, just incredible to see an offense actually produce. And in the first inning, they scored runs in the first inning, three of them. Shocking.
I'm in a Mets group chat, and like it got to a point that every time the Mets score runs, it's like the greatest thing to ever exist. Because we're so not used to it, especially in the first inning. You know, in fact, we have a game, right? It's called How Many Times is Jonathan Villar Gonna Get Picked Off Today? And somehow that game just hasn't popped up in about a week. So
he's gotten picked off this past week. I'm pretty sure he has.
In my defense, that chat is now on mute. So if you guys are listening to this, I'm sorry, but you guys are on mute. So I don't know. Maybe the game is alive and well. But I'm trying to be optimistic here, Ryan. And you're bringing me down because you know good and well how negative I can get. So I was like, you know what? The Mets won. I'll be positive. But even when you try to be positive about the Mets, you just bring up facts and you can't. But that's just, I guess, being a Mets fan. So, Ryan, we got another great pitching performance from Marcus LA. JD Davis hitting home runs and getting some RBIs, which is like, whoa. Brandon Himmel, of course, is doing what Brandon Himmel does. And Javier Baez has been a major boost to this Mets lineup when he's been healthy. He's been healthy for, what, 4 or 5 games? So it hasn't been a lot. But this game is just shows how much of a difference maker Javier Baez can actually be.
100%. I mean, he comes off the IL and first inning gets an RBI double. That slide that he had on the second double was just ridiculous. I wasn't able to watch the game today. I had to listen to it. But watching back at that highlight, I mean, it was almost one of those slides where it probably wasn't the fastest way to get to second base because he starts the dive so far in advance that I actually did – kind of a random story here, but one of my science fair projects when I was in like 7th grade was what's the fastest way to get to the base? And diving is actually the slowest way to get to a base. But
is it?
Yes. Well, I mean, look, it was my travel baseball team. We had everybody essentially run out of double and dive, run out of triple and dive and slide and just run straight through. And running straight through was always the fastest way to get to a base. But if you're trying to avoid a tag like Baez was on that play, it can work out. Regardless, I mean, the guy's a magician with all the stuff that he does on the field. He is, even if you can quibble about whether he's a great fit long-term or whether he's a great baseball player, you can look at the numbers and go through all that. The dude is fun to watch. There's no doubt about that. I like watching Javi Baez play baseball. And it was great to have him back.
No, 100%. 100%. Javier Baez is just hands down an electric player. In fact, if I was Villar, right, how is there not a mandatory meeting for Villar to meet Javier Baez every single day just to teach him how to base run? Because Villar got the speed. He could get a base here and there if he would not get picked off. So if I'm Luis Rojas, right, I am doing a mandatory session every day, a half hour until Villar shows that not going to get picked
off. You know what
it
is, though? Here's the thing. That it's almost like how Barry Bonds was a terrible hitting coach because, he couldn't teach any hitters how to be Barry Bonds. It just comes naturally. that's what it is with Javier Baez. Like, he's just naturally gifted. I don't know if he's the guy that would teach VR to not make mistakes out there. And honestly, VR has a little bit of that natural aggressiveness to him. But the problem with VR is the dude just will daydream out there. I mean,
he has pants in his pants. That dude is everywhere. At the end of the day, what happened with the Mets is that Pilar, Villar, Drury, all these guys are very good bench pieces. But once now they're in the lineup for half the season, that's just not what they do now. You know, so in June and in May, when these guys are playing, it's the bench mob, it's this, it's that. Yeah, because that's what they are supposed to do. They're supposed to come off the bench and play maybe a game a week. But now, when they're actually part of your daily nine every and the Mets lose, I'm like, am I supposed to be shocked? These guys are not MLB caliber starting players. So, like, Jonathan Villar played how many games this year? A lot.
He's got to be top three in the team in games played. Outside of maybe Pete and Dominic Smith, I would say VR is probably right there.
Exactly. And they paid him what, $3-4 million max?
Yeah, I think it was three. Yeah.
They expected him to be a bench piece. So when I'm on Twitter and I see get Villar off of the team, Villar sucks, Villar this, Villar that. Villar was supposed to be the 23rd man. He wasn't supposed to be a guy that's playing 85 games. And
put it this way,
300 at bats.
Even if Guillorme was healthy this year, VR would get about half of the playing time that he's gotten. I mean, the fact that Guillorme has been out a lot is another thing that this team has gone through that no one really talks about, because you don't really think about him at the same way you'll think about losing Lindor for a month. But Guillorme is a great defensive player. He gets on base at a really high clip. He's a better baseball player than Jonathan VR. I know there's some Mets fans who would disagree with me, but trust me, if you dive into the numbers, Guillorme is a much better player. And you've had all these guys out. And so now, most recently, with Guillorme out and Lindor out, I mean, VR's been your starting shortstop for the past 2 weeks. And surprise, surprise, the Mets have been losing a lot of games.
I'm not going to lie, Ryan. I'm going to expose myself here a little bit. I totally forgot about Guillorme. Forgot about him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, we actually had a Guillorme. Like, that thought hasn't even popped into my head. Like, oh, yeah. Not only are the Mets missing a $341 million shortstop, they're also missing his backup. And I was like, whoa, I didn't even realize that. But you know what? That's just part of the Mets season, because if someone's hurt, of course, the other person's hurt. And then it's just a free fall at that point. So I want to get into a little bit of extending players. So obviously the Mets have a shit ton of players that are about to be free agents. We have Syndergaard, we have Conforto, we have Baez, we have Marcus, we have Aaron Loop, who nobody is talking about, you know. We have Familia, we have am I missing anybody else?
That's the main ones. I can't think of anybody else at the top of my head other than, like, you know, Jonathan VR was on a 1 year deal or any of these other guys, but that doesn't really matter.
I think that Villar, that's a pretty big deal, because can you imagine who would play shortstop if it wasn't for him at this point?
Yeah, but I just think that with VR, it's kind of like he's one of those guys where he'll try to test the market, and you know, you're not going to give him a huge contract. He'd probably come back on another 1 year deal.
That you would give him maybe 2 years, what, $5 to $6 million a year? I mean.
Yeah, I think if I was his agent and the Mets, let's just say the Mets were to come to his agent right now with a 2 year, $10 million deal, he would be wise to take it, because he's not going to get as well as he's played at times this year. You look at his numbers overall, he hasn't done enough that he's, I mean, he might get a team that, you know, thinks of him as a piece that really fits, that maybe wants to give him a little bit more. So maybe on a 1 year deal, he could get 6 or 7, but like, it's not like he's going to be breaking the bank. So Yeah, I don't even think he'll get a 2-year deal, to be completely honest.
Nah, I meant 2 years for $5.5 million total. Yeah. I was even talking about 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with all the base running mistakes and his, bro, the pitches that he has been swinging at, dude, have been brutal. Absolutely brutal. So I think 2 years, $5.5 million is even like pushing it. But you know what? Especially with a possible lockout and all that bullshit, I don't think he could get that. But at the end of the day, who knows? Although out of all those players I just named, I want to make a list with you right now, okay?
Okay.
I want to have a must re-sign tier. I want to have a considering heavily to re-sign tier. And I want to have a let them go tier. Okay. All right. So out of Marcus, Conforto, Syndergaard, Villar, Familia, Aaron Loop, all these guys, I guess I'll see you could say a player first, and then I'll go, and then alternate.
Okay.
All right. So the must re-sign tier, I think that number one's pretty obvious.
Go ahead.
No.
You want it for me?
You can go first, Ryan. Yeah.
Well, see, I'm a kind of – maybe I'm just trying to have a hot take here, but when it comes
you
to –
You better not say Conforto.
No, I'm not. I would say that none of them are must resigns, honestly.
Really?
I think there's some I'd like to see back more than others, but that would get you to the strongly considered. I don't think that any of these guys are – like, if there's anyone, I would almost say Aaron Loop
is the must-resign guy.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine the Mets bullpen without Aaron Loop this season?
Yeah, no, it would be brutal. The only reason why I would even hesitate to put him in that, though, is just because relievers are so volatile. Like, you don't know if Loop's going to be this next year. It's very random. And so, look, I think that he's been great. I would love to have him back. But I also don't know if he would have this season again next year. Maybe he does, but.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from because – relievers, no matter what, you don't know what you're gonna get from them the next season. But yeah. I am beyond terrified to even imagine a Mets bullpen that does not involve Aaron Loop. So Aaron Loop, right? Because he's not gonna cost a lot of money. He's just not, you know. So if I'm Cohen, because I want Sandy Alderson so far out of here, I want Sandy Alderson back in Oakland. I want him so far away. So
can we just let Sandy, you know, as an old man, can we just let him, who's gone through a lot, just be an advisor that's not actually really doing much of anything, that's just kind of retired somewhere?
Can we just send Sandy Alderson to a retirement home at this point? At the end of the day,
he's made enough money. He can get like a villa on a beach somewhere. He's fine.
Probably. But at the end of the day, Sandy Alderson did what he came to do. And the only reason why Sandy Alderson was involved in the New York Mets this season was because Steve Cohen wanted to play nice and wanted to say, hey, look, I'm not going to spend money. I'm not going to go crazy like everybody thinks. I even have Sandy Alderson on board.
Honestly, the reason why he brought in Alderson is because – it took such a long time for that sale to go through. If you remember, there was still a point in this offseason where Bertie Van Wagenen was making moves for the Mets. Like, Bertie Van Wagenen extended Marcus Stroman the qualifying offer. I believe he might have even signed – I'm trying to think. Like, there was a couple players that were still under Brody. So, point being, everything was so rushed that Alderson made sense as someone that could come in with all the experience, that knew everybody that was already working in the front office that they wanted to keep, that could kind of remove the pieces that had to be taken out, like Brody, and try to cobble together a front office really quick and have a big offseason. Now, obviously, it didn't all work, but I think that was the idea of bringing Alderson back, was that it was just a simple fit. And that Cohen knew and respected was the other thing, is Cohen wanted him there.
Yeah, and you know, you have to wonder how much respect Cohen lost, but I'm not going to go there. But in fact, BVW was involved, right? So much that when Brad Hand went on waivers, he was like, no, I'm not going to pick him up. And Sandy Alderson said a week later, yes, we would have liked to pick him up. So you're definitely, you're 100% right that the Mets got really fucked over because of the process and the mayor and then that dumb congresswoman, what's her face?
I don't remember that one.
She was like, Cohen is bad, blah, blah, blah. And I find this so funny because every time I go to Citi Field, that same congresswoman is saying, let's get vaxxed and let's go Mets. And I'm like, after all the shit that you just talked about the owner, now you're in a promo video about getting vaccinated for that owner. That just drives me absolutely nuts. But all right. So I think that Aaron Loop is a must re-sign. And I had a lot of questions about Marcus this year, a lot. At first, I was like, I don't even know if I want to give him the qualifying offer, blah, blah, blah. But he proved me wrong. That was the one thing I was wrong about this offseason. The one 1.5 thing, because I'm going to throw McCann in there a little bit. Yeah.
And I believe I argued both of the other sides on that on your show, if I'm not mistaken.
But you also argued for Lindor and Conforto. So, I mean, I'm going to put my
call to wash
a little bit. Toot, toot. So yeah, I was kind of wrong about McCann. But Marcus just proved me wrong. And you can't give him the qualifying offer because he just got that last year. So, if I'm Marcus, right, you're probably looking at, what, 4 years, $100 million?
Maybe.
That's a lot of money for him. That's a lot. Because he's not a number one. He's maybe a 2A, but do you want to pay him number one money? Because I think that there's a team out there that's going to give him number one A money. You're talking about
here's my thing with
we're talking about even like I don't know the Angels, maybe even the if they want to bring him back, I mean, would you give Marcus 4 years 100? I don't know.
So I think that what this is going to come down to, if I had to bet on it right now, I don't think Marcus Stroman comes back. And it's not because I don't want to see him back. But to me, it all hinges on Noah Syndergaard. If Noah Syndergaard accepts the qualifying offer, which I don't know why he should. He should accept it. He's still young enough to reset his value, have a full season, and then get his big contract. So if Noah Syndergaard does accept that qualifying offer, I think Stroman's gone because you already have Carrasco under contract for, I believe, like 15, 16.
No, less. I think Carrasco is making 12.
Is it 12? Okay. I knew it was south of 20 and above 10, but I thought it was somewhere in the middle there. Regardless, you have him. You have Walker. Obviously, you have DeGrom. Tyler McGill has pitched himself into the rotation next year. I'm not saying that they won't get more depth options. But if Noah Syndergaard comes back too, that's a five-man rotation where you're paying four of those guys probably close to $100 million.
It doesn't matter. Ryan, we say the same thing year after year after year, right? It's like, yeah, well, the Mets already have a rotation and this and that. The past 2 years have shown me that you can never have enough rotation.
I'm not saying you can't, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't love to see them bring Stroman back. But I'm talking about how a front office actually thinks during the offseason. And if they are looking at what they have on paper and they're saying, all right, we have DeGrom, Carrasco, Walker, Syndergaard, McGill, David Peterson, and then you also have, you know, the fringe guys in the organization like Yamamoto. Jordan Yamamoto and some others.
Okay.
And then they have to decide whether they're going to give another contract. And even if it's not 100 for four, I wouldn't be surprised if Stroman got the nine-figure deal, whether it's a 5 or 6 year contract. Like, I think he's going to get over $100 million somewhere. So I just don't see when the team still has to address third base and maybe one of their spots in the outfield, maybe two of their spots in the outfield. I just think that they are going to look more towards getting a buy low guy that'll compete, that has a high ceiling, that can come into the rotation, that'll compete with a McGill and a Peterson, over, you know, committing even more resources on another starter in Marcus Stroman. That's just the way I think of it. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be smart to bring back Stroman and Syndergaard. I just don't think it's realistic.
Know what I mean? I'm thinking about who's out there, right? There's going to be Scherzer, obviously.
Who won't pitch for the Mets.
Yeah, there's going to be Kevin Gausman out there.
And who's going to get even more than Stroman.
Which brings me to my next point, right? Do you go ahead and let Syndergaard walk and let Marcus walk and give Kevin Gausman the bag? Because the way that he's pitching, and man, can you imagine DeGrom, Gausman, McGill, Carrasco, Lucchese, Peterson, whoever it is?
I would say no to that because, I think it all hinges on Syndergaard. So let's say Syndergaard decides, you know what? I still have a market. I'm going to be able to get whatever it is. Maybe he wants to get a contract where he gets like his first year, there's an opt-out after it, and he could get like a longer-term deal. So there's a little bit more security against an injury. So let's say Syndergaard declines the qualifying offer, and you're going to let him walk here and get the draft pick back.
Yeah.
Then I think Marcus Stroman becomes a lot more realistic.
Why would you give Stroman about 20 to 25 million, but not give Gausman 25 to like 28 million?
Honestly, look, I agree with you. Like Gausman, I have to really dive into his numbers and what he's done this year to say for sure. I mean, I know he's been better than Stroman, but the question is, how much more is he going to get than Stroman? And I do think there's something to be said about Marcus Stroman, you know, being part of this team and part of the core moving forward, that I could just see. I would be very surprised if both Syndergaard and Stroman are gone next year. I just think it's going to be Syndergaard that comes back because I think he's going to accept the qualifying offer. But if Syndergaard doesn't, I just think again that I could see the Mets re-signing Stroman before I could see them bringing in Gausman. Not to mention the Giants might. I mean, who knows? They might be spending. I mean, they're having a great season. I would not be surprised if the Giants just straight up re-sign Gausman, re-sign Chris Bryant, and kind of reshape the team around those guys with the rest of their veterans kind of on their last leg. So I don't know if Gausman's even going to go anywhere. I mean, he's basically their ace. So I don't know why they wouldn't just re-sign him.
No, 100%, right? But I think
– But yeah, if you're asking me which one's a better pitcher, it's Gausman.
Owner, yeah. Although – I think that Chris Bryant has to be a Met this year. I mean,
that's what I would do.
I'm just giving him the bag before I'm even talking to Marcus or Gausman or Syndergaard or Conforto or anything like that. I'm saying Chris Bryant, here's 7 years, $215 million. Okay, become our everyday third baseman, and on some days, maybe even our left fielder, and call it a day. Because now once you have that, the roster is changed forever. Because now you don't have to cling your hope to J.D. Davis, who becomes hot once every 3.5 weeks. You know, J.D. Davis reminds me of a modern-day Lucas Duda. Because when Duda he gets hot, when he gets hot, he's like, oh my God, J.D. Davis. Like, Lucas Duda. Oh, bro, Lucas Duda used to have months with like 21 homers. Lucas Duda was insane. But then he went for 3 months straight with like a, 95 batting average? Absolutely brutal. So when you bring Chris Bryant in here, all of a sudden now, Vientos is available, J.D. Davis is available, Dom is available. You know, like a lot more guys become more available for the right price. But you know, Ryan, we are talking about the offseason after a Mets win. After a team that was up by 7 games, they were in first place, seemed to have an easy ride to the playoffs. After a win, they are still below 500, and we are talking about the off season before September 1st. Ryan, no matter who owns the Mets, no matter what happens, the Mets are gonna Met.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that has made everyone kind of start looking towards the off season is that the Braves just keep on winning. I mean,
you know why? Because the Braves showed that they actually give a shit. All right, the Braves are like, oh, you know what? With the core that we have now, with the core that's playing the outfield now, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to work. You know, with the bullpen that we have now, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to work. So what do? They go and they get a Richard Rodriguez. They go and they get a Jorge Soler. They go and they get a Eddie Rosario. They go and they get an Adam Duvall. Yes, these guys aren't some all-stars like, oh my God, we got these players. But these players are good enough for a team that needed a little bit of upgrades here and there. Richard Rodriguez is a good closer. Richard Rodriguez is a borderline all-star, okay? And the Braves quietly did their own thing while the Mets basically sat on their hands and jerked themselves off this whole trade deadline. This whole damn trade deadline. You're going to tell me that all the starting pitching we need was a 41-year-old lefty who on a good night lasts five innings? Are you kidding me? And now it's August 22nd, and we're shocked that the Mets aren't in first place. In fact, you're five games back from the Braves. We're shocked. Two games under 500, and we're shocked.
Yeah. No, it's brutal. It's been a really rough stretch. You know, I think I've been a lot easier than others have on what happened at the deadline because, you know, I can kind of explain away a lot of it with the fact is, even though you could say, hey, look at all these moves the Braves made, the Mets didn't make those moves. You know, when it came to the trade deadline, and Zach Scott did not do a good job. I'm not saying he did
and
a good job.
And Sandy Alderson.
Yeah, but – but look, you want to – like Rich Hill, that's a Zach Scott move. Rich Hill, what organization did Rich Hill spend a majority of his time with before he broke through with the Dodgers?
The Red Sox, no.
And where was Zach Scott for all those years? Tampa? The Red Sox.
Oh, okay.
So that's – they had a relationship. That's a Zach Scott move. And they the reason why they got Rich Hill is because he was available to them for nothing. And also at a time where they couldn't get Tyler Anderson a week before the deadline because the Pirates were holding out until the deadline to trade him and they needed a pitcher. So they get the discount bin version in Hill, and that clearly has not worked out. But,
oh, no shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Could have fooled me.
But the thing is, all of these teams at the trade deadline, what they were asking from the Mets was their top 10 prospects. And
what did the Mets do, Ryan? And what did the Mets do? The Mets went ahead and gave up not only a top 10 prospect, a top 5 prospect for a rental that everybody knew had a heel problem. And then four games in, oh, wow, he's hurt. Who would have thought? Who would have saw that coming? Oh, I don't know anybody who knew that Javier Baez had a heel problem. Are you
and
kidding
what, and
me?
What and like the three games they've won the past 3 weeks have all been due to Javier Baez. Which
so
again,
what's your point?
Here's my point.
Ryan, you just said the three games they've won. The three games you gave up.
I'm
for three games.
I would not have made the trade myself, but when everyone is prospect hugging over Pete Crow Armstrong, and I get it, he could be great. He could have been the answer in center field. He is still 4 years away compared to the other top 10 prospects who can impact this team a lot sooner. So that's why he was the one that went. And I do wish that they had shot Pete Crow Armstrong around a little bit more because I think there would have been a better package out there. But they, I don't believe that they viewed Javi Baez as a rental. And I think that's
really?
The
really?
Yes.
So you're going to tell me after the owner tweets out how it's hard to understand how major league hitters can underperform
when Baez was on the IL.
You're going to go and have your Baez, who has no clue most of the nights where the strike zone even is. A guy who strikes out a hell of a ton, over $200 million.
No, because he's not going to get that much money. But
I think he is.
I don't think he is. Not in this market. Not with who else is hitting free agency at the same time as him. The point is that, look, I don't want to sit here and argue as if I love the trade and I love Javi Baez. I'm just trying to explain the rationale of the front office. And the way I look at it, I believe that when Javi Baez is sending stuff out in the media before the deal gets done, I want to play with Francisco Lindor. When Francisco Lindor is campaigning for it, that there is an understanding that something is going to get done in the offseason. I don't love it either. But I think that's the way the Mets were viewing it. So if they're viewing it as we are getting a two-time Gold Glove, two-time All-Star, you know, World Series MVP, whatever you want to call it, if they're viewing it that way, it's easier to swallow giving up a top five prospect.
Ryan,
I'm not saying I thought it was a good move, but I'm saying that's why they did it.
Okay, I'm not mad at the fact that they gave up PCA. In fact, I don't think that PCA is going to hit. I think that he's a glove first center fielder, and I lived through the Juan Lagares era, and I don't want to do that again. So I'm not upset that they traded for PCA. I mean, that they traded PCA. I'm upset who they got back for PCA. I'm upset that they got back Baez and not Bryant for PCA. In fact, I think that PCA for Bryant would have got the deal done. I really believe that.
Well, here's why it didn't. Because nobody else wanted Baez. So, whoever else did, they weren't willing to pay that. So, you know, you gotta give Jed Hoyer some credit there. He knew that he had a nice little package lined up to send Chris Bryant to San Francisco. And he probably kind of pulled Chris Bryant from the table for the Mets and basically, you know, was like.
And then you go elsewhere. I don't understand why it was basically only the Mets and Cubs. If you're the Mets and you're willing to give up a top five prospects, you go to Minnesota. You go to Colorado. You're like, hey, I'll give you a top five prospect for Marquez and Trevor Story. Or you go to Minnesota and be like, hey, I'll give you PCA. And I'll take on Donaldson's contract. I'm not going to take on the full contract, but I'll take back Donaldson and Maeda. I'm like, that's a package. That'll be like, you know what? That makes sense because
that would have been worse though.
Who needs? I disagree.
You think that Maeda and Donaldson for PCA is better than Baez?
Hear me out. Because I think that if Minnesota is paying half of Donaldson's money and you get Maeda back, not only are you feeling the third baseman need, you're also filling a number two spot in the rotation, and you're giving up PCA, which makes a lot more sense than giving up PCA for Javier Baez, who as of now is a rental, and back then had a heel problem. In fact, in his first game, Gary even said, be careful about Baez because he does have a heel problem. And what happened? He got hurt.
Look, it's again, I'm not saying that it was the best trade, but I think that it's hard to sit here and know exactly what the Twins wanted. The Rockies were complete. I mean, they failed miserably at the deadline. So I don't think you could have got anything done with them. And then for Minnesota, I mean, if you're going to trade Peter Armstrong, you better be getting Jose Berrios back. And the reality was they wanted and they got more than what
PCA. It's insane what the Twins got back for Jose Berrios.
Yeah,
Can we talk about that for a second?
They set the bar extremely high, and they were able to get it. So
they got the moon and the stars. They got the fucking galaxy back. I don't think people realize how good Austin Martin is. Austin Martin is Francisco Alvarez caliber type of prospect. Austin Martin is going to be a superstar. Austin Martin was the number five overall pick, and was the number one guy in the entire draft. Austin Martin is going to be a bona fide all-star. The fact that they got Austin Martin and Woods Richardson back, I was like, whoa, this has to be a parody account. Has to be. So bravo to the Minnesota Twins for pulling that fleece off. That was a fleece. You know what? I was so shocked that I thought that BVW was the GM of the Blue Jays for a second. I was like, Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson? I was like, whoa, good job to the Minnesota Twins GM, whoever the hell you are. I don't know who you are. I probably never heard of you, but that was a fantastic trade by them. Kudos to you. That's all I got to say about that. Although, talking about parody accounts, Ryan, when I saw that tweet that Steve Cohen put out, I was like, whatever, some troll probably. But when I saw that check mark, that was the most excited I've been about the Mets in weeks. In weeks. I was like, get him, Stevie. Get him. The way that your team is acting out there, how they're so comfortable. And they're saying, oh, yeah, I wouldn't be worried. And Pete going ahead and saying, just believe in us. Just this. Just that. What? And then when your owner puts you on full blast, it took you extra innings to score more than two runs. And then everybody's like, oh, yeah, message received, message received, message received. And then you do what? You go back to scoring two runs. So, I mean, what do you think about that tweet, Ryan?
I think that for fans like you that are passionate, I think that that tweet went a long way. Does that tweet actually mean anything as far as the way the team performs? I don't think so. I don't think that the clubhouse read it in any type of way that that suddenly got them to play with some urgency, because quite honestly, they didn't respond to it. So I don't think it really does much of anything. But what I do think that it shows you is it shows you that Steve Cohen's frustrated. And going into an off season where now Steve Cohen is officially in the club, it is absolutely a club to be a Major League Baseball owner. It's an old guy, old white dude club. He is in now. They can't do anything about it. Look, now a frustrated Steve Cohen could mean some big things in the offseason. And I think that's why we started off talking about the offseason, because Cohen can say, you know what, I'm done with all this. Give me Chris Bryant, you know, like you said, 7 years, 215, just get him. So I think that's the one thing I'll take from that tweet is I think Steve Cohen's really going to be spending this offseason.
Also, Ryan, right? Like right now it's all talk, okay? Right now I'm just like, oh, yo, I'm frustrated, blah, 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 right? But when the offseason comes and everybody is gone, Luis Rojas, Andy Alderson, fucking Yu Quattlebaum. I don't know how a guy named Yu Quattlebaum is in the major leagues as a hitting coach. When your name is Yu Quattlebaum, you should be a preschool teacher, right? Mr. Quattlebaum teaching a bunch of kids. You should not be a major league professional hitting coach, all right? He's gone. Everybody is gone besides for Jeremy Hefner. You know that when you get this owner frustrated, there are prices to pay.
Yeah, I said it. And I said it. I think I said it 2 weeks ago. When all this kind of started, where it was like, okay, wow, the Phillies at the time, the Phillies would be the team that would take over the division. And I said, look, if this continues, heads are going to roll this offseason. That's just a reality here. I mean, if this team finishes in third, even if they finish in second and don't, I guess there might be a scenario where the Mets would finish really strong and come up just short, that maybe some of these guys would have their jobs spared.
Ryan, how? How?
If the Braves keep winning.
Ryan,
if the Braves end up winning, I mean, who knows? I don't know how many. They're at 68, 69 wins. If the Braves end up getting to 94, 95 wins,
Ryan, you were
and the
up
Mets
by
win 92.
Games. You were up by seven games. I don't care. I don't care.
I'm just telling you that, like, there is a world where the Mets have a great final month of the season and they don't completely clean house. But look, you're right. They were in the driver's seat and they've blown it. And so now you're looking at Rojas, who is still a second-year manager without a long-term contract. Very easily could see them move on from him. You could see them move on from the hitting coach, Quattlebaum, and everyone else you mentioned there. But I'm just saying that it's not a – there is a world where the Mets don't win the division and Rojas is back next year, but it would take the Mets playing great baseball down the stretch and the Braves just being better.
That is not a world I want to live in, Ryan. I'm going to tell you right now.
Well, you're the voice of the reactionary fan. I don't expect you to
– I mean, because, right, Ryan, every year we go in circles. Every year as a Met fan, we're like,
this year is different.
This is different. Oh, wow. But we finished good last year.
I'm just saying it's not the Wilpons. So I don't buy into the bullshit that there's like some curse.
There
you
go,
the
Ryan.
They're never
there
gonna
we
be
go.
Good.
There's the Ryan cursing is welcome on my podcast, bro.
Well, if, you know, I it's hard to shake my professionalism. You know, I gotta I gotta do the professional podcast, you know, 5 days a week where I gotta be careful letting the curse word slip. You know, I'll curse a little more on the Spotify green rooms, but
I mean, listen, right? I'm just at a point where, like, the Mets have a good finish and we're so optimistic about next year. And then next year comes and it's the same bullshit over again. You know,
the team's going to, there's going to be wholesale changes on this roster. Even if they, unless they win a World Series, I think some things are going to change.
If they win the World Series, I mean, I'll be shocked if they,
that's
if
what
they
I'm,
make the
that's
wild
what I'm
card
saying.
At this point. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Even if, you know, if they're to find a way to win the division and then they, you know, get swept by the Brewers in the NLDS, I don't think that winning the division suddenly makes them look at their third base situation and say, yeah, JD Davis, let's do it for another year. I think they're going to address third. Now, them addressing third, and fans might not like this, could simply be that Javi Baez is re-signed to play second and Jeff McNeil is your third baseman. I mean, that could be the solution. But if it is the solution, they better get a big upgrade in the outfield, one of those corner spots.
Who's even available, though?
Like Nick Castellanos. That's one name. You know, I don't – he's a pretty bad outfielder, but he's a good hitter.
Yeah.
You know, I would still think Castellanos is a better left fielder than Dom. So maybe that would be the move.
Doesn't matter to me, though, right? Because even if you re-sign Baez, right, I'm still going after Bryant. I'm putting him at third, and I'm putting McNeil in right field. You know, because, dude, I'm so sick of Conforto, bro. Like, I mean, what did I tell people, bro? Be careful. He only played 48 games last year. He had
also, be careful with what you say. He's been their best hitter for like 3 weeks now.
Oh my God, 3 weeks! How many wins have that turned into, Ryan?
Hasn't been his fault.
How many wins has that turned into, Ryan?
Has not been his fault.
Ryan, that's not my question. How many wins?
I'm not answering your question. We already know how many wins they've had. I'm just telling you, he's been pretty good for 3 weeks.
Oh my. At the end of the day, right, we always say
here's my honest question to you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If I was to say opening day next year, let's just say, who would you rather be penciled in to be an everyday outfielder for you, Dominic Smith or Michael Conforto?
Do I count money?
The only way I see Conforto coming back would be on the qualifying offer or a team-friendly deal. So
I mean, right, you have to think that he's a Boris client, right? So I heavily doubt that he's going to take the qualifying offer. I mean, I have to say Dom, only because I don't want to tie my money into Conforto anymore. I just don't.
I'm saying not a long-term deal. So I'm saying if Conforto comes back, it would either be a qualifying offer where it's a one-year deal, or it is like he declines it, he finds nothing on the market, and he comes back to the Mets anyway on like a one-year deal. So I'm saying you're not tied to him long-term, but for next season. Because
I have a question for you. Is Conforto holding me back from signing a big free agent?
No. What I'm saying is you know, let's say you're whoever they get. Let's say they're going to bring in a legitimate, you know, middle of the order bat. And it's essentially, I'm basically saying straight up, who would you rather have next year playing 140 plus games in the outfield, Michael Conforto and Dominic Smith? And to give you my answer, it's Michael Conforto, because
you know what? If you're going Conforto, I'll go Dom Smith. And Do you want me to tell you why, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My ears just popped. Let me fix my headphones. Let's put down this. All right, Ryan, here we go. Number one, injuries. Conforto always finds his way on the aisle. Always. All right, Dom is a first baseman turned left fielder. Okay, he has improved heavily, like, beyond what I ever thought he would be. in left field. He his glove is turning into a solid glove. He hits lefties especially well. Okay, I think that he's going to hit righties better next year because it doesn't make sense how you can bat 300 against lefties but bat 198 against righties. That just doesn't make sense to me. And he stays healthy. The best thing a player could do is availability is the best ability. At number two, Dom is going to be making about $4 to $5 million next year. Conforto is going to be making about $18 million on a 1 year deal. Okay, so that right there, I don't think Conforto is $13 to $14 million better than Dominic Smith, and that $13 to $14 million could mean adding a number four pitcher in the rotation and re-signing Aaron Loop. So I would rather have that option than putting another gamble on Conforto and more money into a right fielder that's just, number one, too inconsistent, gets hurt way too much, and the fan base is falling out of love with.
Okay, let me give you the argument for Conforto.
You're not going to win it, but go ahead.
I think I am. All right. So durability in question. 2018, 2019, and 2020, he was pretty much healthy the whole year. 150 games each year in 2018 and 2019. Played 54 of 60 in 2020. This year, Michael Conforto has been worth his WAR is 0.6. Not great. Dom's is minus 0.2. He's been one of their worst players this year. If you look at his career weighted runs created plus, I know this is the metrics. People don't love this stuff, but outside of 2016, which was his worst year, every single year, Michael Conforto has graded out as an above average player. Most of the times, pretty well above average. His career WRC plus is 124. So the track record for Michael Conforto far outweighs the track record for Dominic Smith of being good. Michael Conforto is actually a good right fielder. Dominic Smith can make plays in left, but I think we've seen he does not have an arm for the outfield. If you have a runner on second, it doesn't matter if it's, I don't know, name the slowest catcher on the planet. A base hit scores ever. Wilson Ramos on a sharp hit single to left might score on Dominic Smith. Which is saying something. If he gets a good secondary, I don't know. That's a good test right there. I would watch that pay-per-view. Dominic Smith try to throw out Wilson Ramos 10 plays. But yeah, I'm just saying now when you bring in money and all those other factors, that's where Dom makes more sense because he's under team control. Michael Conforto, if he's going to get paid, if you need to lock him up long-term. But per my original like setup there, if it's just for next year, Michael Conforto is undoubtedly a better outfielder and a better overall player than
Dominic. But is he $14 million better than Dominic Smith? He's not. He's just not. And to go through the Michael Conforto roller coaster,
I think at this point,
you have to start to pay me to go through it, all right? Because it's just not worth it. It's not worth it knowing that if there's bases loaded, 9 out of 10 times, he's not going to get a hit.
You know what you sound like right now?
If you say Frank the Tank, I'm going to smack you.
I'm going to say something worse. You're thinking the same way Jeff Wilpon did. That's what you're thinking like. You're getting sick of your own players because the team sucks and they haven't come through enough. And you're being a little short-sighted. Like, can't you see the scenario where Michael Conforto signs with the Red Sox next year and is an all-star, is hitting like 320? And you're like we've seen it played out before. So what I'm saying is
we have never seen bat 320. We've seen him bat that in 48 games.
I was exaggerating, but yes. We did see him hit 320. It was called the 2020 season.
Like I said, 48 games, Ryan, right?
54, but yeah. 322 average.
Oh, wow. 54, you see? In fact, he even got hurt in a 60-game season. But I'm not going to go there, Ryan.
He only missed six games. What, did he get hurt at the end?
Six games, that's 10% of the year.
I mean, I don't remember him actually getting hurt in 2020.
He got hurt. And in fact, right, when the when the Mets were making a push to go ahead and make the playoffs, he was like, I don't know. I could have came back. I could have blah, 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 blah. But he didn't. All right. I'm sick of Michael Conforto. I do not want Michael Conforto on the team next year on anything over $15 million a year. Okay. If he takes a qualifying offer, I won't be mad, but I won't be happy. I'll be neutral, and I hope that he proves me wrong just like Marcus did this year. But I am sick and tired of Michael Conforto. Yes, does he have some nights where it's like, wow, I like Michael Conforto. In fact, I was at that, I think it was the Braves game, where he made that amazing throw in the ninth inning, and I was yelling my head off and my girlfriend thought I was going to die. I was so happy. And she's like, wow, I've never seen you that happy. And I'm like, babe, you make me that happy every day. You know, I'm sweet. I'm smooth. That's just what I do. So, and you know, like, yes, there are nights where I'm like, yo, Conforto is the guy. But you can't get high on your own supply. And you just have to take back and look like, you know what? Would it shock me if he goes to Boston, gets a 5-year deal in the 9-figure range, and he's an all-star every other year? No, I won't be shocked. Would I be upset? No, because I know that there's a possibility that could happen. But I just don't have it in me to go for another ride with him. I don't.
No, and I know there's a lot of Mets fans that feel that way. But, you know, personally, I think I told this story. Man, I'm trying to think. I think it was on like Thursday or Friday's Locked On Mets. But, you know, personally, I saw Michael Conforto when he was a rookie take probably the best batting practice I've ever seen in person. And where it was the end of his round. He had been spraying line drives everywhere, and he hit 6 home runs in a row that, from where I was standing, it looked like he hit the exact same seat in the upper tank in right field at Marlins Park 6 times in a row. Wow. Then he took a pitch and hit it dead central out. And I thought that this guy was going to be incredible. And he's shown enough flashes of it that it's hard for me to shake it and just say, yeah, he's never going to put it together. And I thought last year was him finally doing it, especially coming off 2019, which was his best year. So
Years into it, Ryan, 7 years, we're almost a decade. Is a long time, you know.
But if you look at what he's done cumulatively, like, instead of just focusing on his bad stretches and everything,
cumulatively, he's a .250 hitter.
Yeah, but we don't look at batting average anymore.
WRC and RC plus and HIV, yes, and everything else, right?
That's how people are looking at players nowadays. And, you know, if you want to just look at a simple stat, on base percentage for his career, .353. I mean, that's good. It's not great, but it's very good. And, you know, I'm just saying that he's not as bad as fans make him out to be. And if you get a player of his caliber on a 1-year deal that can really outperform that contract, I'm saying I would not be upset by it. I'm not saying that, you know, in the offseason, I was telling you to give the guy $100 million and give him a 4 or 5 year deal. I'm not saying that anymore. I'm just saying on a 1-year deal, Michael Conforto is a player I'd want back.
Like I said, I wouldn't be mad, but I definitely wouldn't be happy. I would be neutral. I would be like, you know what? If I have to go through it for one more year, he better perform or I'm trading him. Like, I'm done. Like, if by June he's not hitting .270, .280 in that range, I'm cutting my bait, I'm cutting my losses, and I'm shipping him off to whoever wants him. You know, like, I'm done. You know, because think about it, right? We were like, the Yankees are going to grab him up, everything like that. Well, the Yankees got Gallo. So the Yankees aren't going to get him. You know, so it's not like he has a crazy big market, but I understand. Ryan, it's been so good having you on. Go ahead and plug whatever you want to plug.
Well, you can listen to Locked On Mets 5 days a week. You can also find us on YouTube now. And you can find the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
In fact, I watched Ryan's YouTube episode, Really Handsome Man, if I do say so myself.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Mendy. I appreciate that.
Ryan, there are rumors going around saying that Mendy may be a guest on the Locked On Mets show. John Heyman may have reported it. I don't know. But what are you saying about that? Can you confirm? Can you not confirm?
I think it was Bob Nightingale. I'll be honest. Bob Nightingale gets a lot of stuff wrong.
So I hear that Bob Nightingale reported it too. So we have Ryan on it right now in the hot seat, the whole lot of Mets hot seat. You know what? That's going to become a segment on my show, the whole lot of Mets hot seat, where I put guests in very uncomfortable situations. So, Ryan, what's the verdict?
The verdict, man, I got a short form show. It's supposed to be about 25 minutes. And
awesome. We will see Mendy on the Nets.
You can see Mendy on Locked On Mets Locker Rooms. Or, my bad, Spotify Green Room.
Ryan, thank you so much. And, dude, you were my first guest, and it's always so much fun talking to you, man. And I really appreciate it. And you became sort of a Mets fan friend, you know? And like, I really appreciate it, Ryan. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys. Have a good one.